So today we're going to do an interview, and it's only on podcast, about Love Your Porn Addicted Neighbor. We're not going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about all sorts of themes. So these are adult themes. It might not be suitable for sensitive listeners. If you have young kids in the car and you're just listening to this in your car, maybe let me recommend listen to it ahead of time and then decide if your children, it's suitable for your children to hear. And if you've been hurt by this topic, I want to caution you that we're going to be dealing with this in a frank and honest way. We're not here to wrestle through all the moral issues, but to focus on loving people in our lives who suffer from this addiction. So please be aware that this could be a triggering topic and make decisions accordingly. Porn addiction is still seen as different from alcohol addictions and gambling addiction in our society. I won't make any statements around whether it should be the same or not. I'm not an expert in that matter either. That said, I've tried for years to interview somebody on stage. And each and every time, it's been a social stigma that's gotten in the way. And regardless of your thoughts on porn addiction, today I want to look past the stigma and talk to a real person about what it's like to live with this addiction, how it's impacting their lives and the lives of people they love. There's this line from the Bible that says that all the Bible can be simplified down to two lines: love God and love your neighbor. And today we're going to focus on loving our neighbor. And we found here around Friend Church time and time again that not knowing your neighbor, having misconceptions about your neighbor, having biases about your neighbor, is a huge impediment to loving your neighbor. And so we've brought in people who have other faith backgrounds, people have other cultural backgrounds, people who are physically and emotionally different. And today I want to talk about a group of people who are addicted to porn. To be clear, what we're dealing with is porn addiction, and only porn addiction. When I asked people, I said, hey, I'm going to do an interview with a porn addict, people would say things like, well, are they a cheater? Does that mean they're a sex addict? Does that mean they're a pedophile? Does that mean they're violent? So already we can tell we have many preconceived notions about what this is. And because hurt and damage has been done in the name of sexuality and through our sexuality, I understand the reality is this topic's hard to look at. It's even more difficult to know where porn addiction starts and sex addiction ends. Are they the same? Are they different? How much are they overlap? How porn and sex assault are connected? I don't know. This is way beyond the scope of what we're going to talk about today. But I understand sexuality has been hurtful to many, and this topic in particular has hurt many. That said, I do want to start the discussion to explore what porn addiction is from the lens of somebody who's addicted to it. I want to learn the humanity behind someone who is addicted to porn. In the end, I want us to wrestle through what it means for us to love our porn-addicted neighbor. And today, I want to introduce you to Chris. It's not his real name, but we decided that's the name we're going to use for this interview. So if we were on stage today, I'd get you all to give him a big warm round of applause, because he's a pretty brave man for coming up and doing this with us. So welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
How are you doing over there?
I'm pretty good.
We're sitting where we normally meet. We're just soundboard out, some mics out, just kind of sitting here in this kind of awkward space going, okay, let's do this. So let me just ask a few questions. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in southern Alberta.
Okay.
Small town.
Okay.
And then after graduating high school, I moved to Calgary.
How small of a town?
About 50,000 people.
That's a small... I grew up in like 5,000 people with one Dairy Queen.
Okay, well, small city.
Okay. So you've been living here for quite a while?
Yeah, just about 20 years.
20 years. Wow.
Yeah.
North, south? What are you... Like, are you...
South.
What is it about this city and this north and south business?
I haven't figured that out yet, but we know what we like.
Isn't that funny? Okay. So you're married...
Yes.
When did you meet your husband?
When I was 19.
19?
Yeah.
Where'd you guys meet?
We met at a gathering of friends.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a colleague said, hey, want to hang out with some friends tonight? Sure. And that's where we met.
And was it like how you doing at first sight, or was it kind of like warmed up? Or?
No, it wasn't. You know, I was like, okay, well, whoever that guy is, whatever. And, you know, but the conversation went really well that night. And so you know, the next day we saw each other again, and then again and again. And
nice.
Yeah.
How long have you guys been together?
Well, since that day, it's been just about 19 years.
Okay. And married formally?
Yeah, married formally. Uh-oh. Got to do the math here.
If he's listening, you got to get this number right.
Right? 10 years. This will be our 10-year anniversary this year.
Wow. Congratulations,
Thank
you guys.
Thank you. Yeah.
Wow. And you have a fur baby, right?
We do. We do. We have a 6-year-old golden retriever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Name?
Her name is Millie.
Ah.
Yeah. She keeps us busy.
So you know all the dog parks within X number of minutes from your house?
Absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah. And if there's one we missed, she'll sniff it out and let us know.
Nice. So you ready to get into this?
Yeah.
It's a hard topic, isn't it?
It is. And it gets really big really quickly.
Yeah. Now, me and you have been talking about this for probably close to 6 months now.
At least.
Give or take about 2 years.
Yeah.
And originally, we were going to do this on stage.
We were.
But we decided that this was going to be more appropriate for everyone involved.
Yeah. You know, although, you know, this addiction that I'm dealing with is really my journey, it is my spouse's journey as well. And I think where we really kind of discovered the strength of the social stigma was when it was time for him and I to sit down and say, okay, you know, here's the date that Vince and I think that is going to be good. And, mm-hmm. and here's what it's going to look like. And, you know, are you comfortable with this? Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I've given it some thought and I'm not. Like, I would have a really difficult time sitting in a crowd, in the congregation and hearing people do things like, oh, that's just wrong.
Wow.
You know, I would have a difficult time watching people judge the man that I love and a man, you know, who is trying to not only break down those barriers, but also overcome something that he didn't ask for either.
Wow. That's pretty profound.
It was very profound. I had to, you know, I had to think about it for a couple of days before I made any rash decisions. And, I decided that, you know, baby steps.
He really loves you, doesn't he?
Very much so.
Wow, you're a lucky man.
I am.
So why don't we go right back to the beginning?
Okay.
What was your first memory of interaction with porn?
You know, this is something I keep trying to bring to the surface, and I can't actually remember the very first time.
Okay.
I remember bits and parts of what may have been the first, but...
Do you mind talking a bit about that?
Sure. I mean, one of them was a very innocent... I'm wondering if they were my dad's porn that I found. I'm not really quite sure.
Sorry, Dad.
Could have been dad, stepbrother. Not sure.
Okay.
But someone hid them somewhere.
Okay.
And I found them, and I think that was a very natural part of just growing up. It was part of puberty. It was part of discovering who I was.
Okay.
And I think that is a very normal
so
part.
So it felt innocent at that point.
Yeah, it was.
Well, it would have been straight porn too, right?
It was, yeah.
And did you understand at that point that you were not straight?
Well, I had a pretty good idea.
Okay.
But that was before I had really kind of reconciled all of that. Okay. I was still too young to really reconcile what I was experiencing.
Okay.
But I don't think whether the content was gay or straight really mattered at the moment. It was, whoa, that's a lot of
pictures.
Skin. Yeah.
Okay.
And I didn't know that's what people looked like.
Okay. So and pretty innocent.
It was very innocent as far as I or anyone else would be concerned.
Okay.
And certainly nothing that if, you know, my parents would have found out at that moment, they wouldn't have, you know, gone off the handle. They would have been like, okay, well, you know, how do you feel about that?
That's what a naked person looks like.
That's okay. Right. That's right. And then probably afterwards it would have been, mister, you better hide that box in a better place.
Yeah. We're going to give you a padlock.
That's right.
So obviously in your family, there was, if you found it in your family, that was...
It was there.
Yeah. It was part of like people had this. This is something that was part of your family growing up experience. People had magazines like this mm-hmm. in their possession.
Which was interesting because you never ever talked ever about it.
Oh, ever. So it wasn't open. It was pretty...
Yeah, we didn't even, I mean, the word penis would make my whole family just blush. It was,
So when you first saw this magazine, there's obviously some titillation. There's some sense of like, ooh, was there a sense of shame connected to it at the point?
Mm-mm.
Really? Just innocent?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what was the first time you interacted with porn and you went, something has shifted. It's no longer that innocent.
You know, I think I was a young adult by that time, and I think it was... I didn't grow up with the internet.
Okay.
Right. So as a young adult.
Based on age or based on?
Based on age.
Okay.
Like and the, it just wasn't there. Yeah, right.
Like dial-up, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I bulletin board, BB, bulletin yeah, board systems, yeah, whatever
yeah,
they were
yeah,
called.
Yeah.
In like 1995.
We might be dating ourselves on that one.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, circa 2000 and the dot-com boom. Of course, I was in the tech industry, so I had a computer and I now lived on my own and I was, you know, free and able to go to all these places. And, and it was probably right about then when, you know, I had the first, gee, I really want to keep going back to that place.
Hmm.
And you don't see it at the time.
You don't see what at the time?
You don't see that going back to that place is something that's controlling you.
Hmm.
I would think that it would be very similar to you go for a beer every day after work with the guys, you're 19, 20 years old, right? That's just normal. That's what you want to do. It's fun. It's social. It's exciting. It's what you enjoy doing with your life.
Okay.
But you don't see the progression of the beer turning to two, turning to four. And by the time you're 30, it's, you know, getting hammered just about every day before you go home from work or between work and home rather.
Yeah.
You don't see that with internet.
Why?
Activity. Well, forest for the trees.
Huh. Now let's, so I want to be very clear here because this has been part of your life for a long time. So it's, you understand it, but I want people to see it through your lens.
Okay.
I remember you told me a story one time where you were watching a movie with your family.
Hmm.
Do you remember the story?
I do.
Do you mind sharing that?
It was Pump Up the Volume.
<Isn't that laughs> Christian Slater. Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And it was, there was a scene, when he was a radio.
Okay.
He was in broadcasting and he was, making the listeners believe that he was masturbating.
Okay.
And it was very embarrassing to sit with, you know, my dad's on one side of me and this is happening on the screen and I'm just discovering what this is for, you know, 12, 13, however old I was at that time. And, yeah, that was very profound.
So you said your anxiety was really high.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened?
Then I decided to kind of escape the room for a little bit and I think all the listeners will understand when I say, so I went to the bathroom and I locked the door.
Just so you know, we can say masturbation here. We've already put a warning on the front.
It's easier to say. It's more difficult to say when you say I did this. So I went into the bathroom and I masturbated. I found the scene very triggering, or I guess triggering may not be the right word at that sense. It was very titillating.
Okay.
And, you know, and again, you don't realize it then. But your brain kind of goes, oh, that feels way better now.
Wait a second.
All that anxiety is now gone.
Ah, that's where I wanted to get to.
Yeah.
So it's not even the titillation. It was the anxiety of seeing the titillating scene with your family and the anxiety inside of you.
That's right. So I suppose it was a little of both. But the real thing that we need to understand for me is that I discovered in that moment that by masturbating – I could relieve my stress.
Would you say that that's the core of the entire, that masturbation and interaction with porn to masturbate and orgasm ultimately leads you to a way to deal with things in your life?
I think that that is a very strong possibility.
Mm. And for you specifically, that's been a fairly common theme?
Very much so. And as I've gone through recovery, I've really been able to look with sobering eyes, if you will. Oh, wow, I'm really stressed. And this is one of those moments I would go to the office and take a moment to myself.
Meaning look at porn.
Meaning look at porn and masturbate.
Gotcha.
And then get back to, you know, whatever life I was doing. And you don't necessarily see it. So, yes, it becomes like a drink or a cigarette or shopping.
So, if I can say, it's using sex, but it's not for sex.
No, I mean, at the time, I think you think it may be for sex because that's the drug.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's all about making yourself feel better. It's really about saying to your brain, I can't deal with whatever is in my head at the moment. Oh. I'm going to focus on this drug over here, this drug called porn. And when I focus on it, everything else seems in check. Everything else in life seems good.
And after you've had an orgasm, do you feel the same tension about life? Do you feel the same way? Or do you feel like you can handle more of life now?
Sometimes it's one and sometimes it's the other. So sometimes you're in a headspace and you orgasm and you think, okay, that was good. Let's get back. I can now handle whatever was in my brain.
Okay.
And then there's other times where you feel the complete opposite and you think, okay, well, that didn't work at all. I think I'll try it again. Yeah, I'll try it again because it's worked before. So if I keep trying, it'll definitely work again. And if it doesn't work and you keep trying, well, maybe I'll look at something different or something new, something that I wouldn't say really goes with my core values. Right? So
you told me at some point in the effort to get the orgasm you needed to deal with what you wanted to deal with, your proclivity, taste in porn, I was going to say taste doesn't sound right, but the porn you were looking at stopped being even something that you were interested in.
Yeah, and that wasn't a point. That was many, many, many points, 20 years in the making. And I look back on some of the things that I've looked at with excitement, and I do feel a lot of guilt about that.
So once again, you have memories of erotic imagery that is still titillating, but there's shame or guilt attached to that feeling? Did I miss you?
Okay, sorry about that. It's no longer titillating at all. I now look back and go, wow, I can't believe that I watched that time and that's what I needed to get off.
Wow. So it almost feels like it escalated beyond what you were comfortable with.
Yeah, it very much escalated beyond my values.
Wow. So what I'm hearing you say is a few things. There's a compulsivity to this. That's not tied to sexuality. It's tied to the release and kind of the neurochemicals of this that helps you deal with life, helps you feel good about life. But it's compulsive. And it's almost like it's a drug that your body's getting used to, and so you got to kind of escalate it. Is that fair?
Very much so. I think it would be like the beer analogy.
Yeah.
Well, one beer used to give us a nice buzz.
Right.
Well, now after years and years of practice, it takes a lot more.
Yeah.
Right. And I would say that for me, porn had the exact same effect.
Wow. So at the beginning, a little bit worked. As it got further and further, it had to get more extreme, more something for it to work.
That's right. And because I stayed in that world of porn, I myself didn't have a really healthy perspective of what sex was to be used for. So it really kind of put me in a vulnerable spot.
How do you mean?
Well, I guess if you think about how we grow up in a nuclear situation, you know, you grow up, you get an education, you get married, you have kids, so on and so forth.
Okay.
When you grow up in a very nuclear beaver cleaver world, you know, a picture of a Family Guy watchers will know this, a picture of a side boob is very exciting. But once you get older and you start getting into this world of porn, the side boob doesn't do it for you anymore.
Hmm.
Now it needs to be a little bit more exposure.
Hmm.
And then that exposure doesn't work for you anymore. So now it needs to be movement.
Hmm.
And that doesn't work for you anymore. And now it needs to be...
keeps going and going and going.
And keeps going and going. And the real danger with the advent of the internet is it's not the same magazine over and over anymore. It's now thousands of images in mere minutes.
It's the internet. Millions of bajillions of images.
That's right.
Videos, whatever you want.
And it is surprising how AdWords and ad places, and you understand how advertising on the internet works, you could be looking at car parts and you see this little banner over here and it pulls you in and you're off looking at something else and your whole day has fallen apart and you've gone to places you never intended to go.
Mm. When did you realize you have a problem?
About 8 years ago.
And that was your language. I'm not telling you you have a problem. That was what you told me.
That was when I started to be, I guess, in the pre-contemplative stage. Gee, I think I might have a problem here.
Was it a specific moment? Was it a specific, or was it just a sense of something's not right?
It was a sense of something's not right.
Okay.
And I know that, you know, all the single guy friends that we hang with, it's all normal and it's all great, but there was something that just wasn't clicking. And I really noticed it in my marriage.
Huh.
And I think that was when I went, I want to do something about this.
How did it show up, if you don't mind me talking about it?
It showed up in the sense that, and I'm just going to say this, our activity in the bedroom reduced. You know, I think we went through a really stressful period in our careers and instead of recovering from that and getting back to a healthy relationship, we kind of stayed down that side path for too long. And, you know, my husband worked very hard. He's very career minded and he would be very tired. And so I would think, well, you know, it won't hurt. I'll just, you know, look after him until he's sleeping. And and then after he was asleep, I would get up and, you know, go to the office again and look at porn and, you know, because that just seemed like a good way to deal with it. Oh, gee, if I do this, I can relieve stress and I can go to sleep. And you know, again, everything is well-intentioned. I never meant to pull myself away from him. And I never pulled away from him. But pulling away is what happened in the process of letting him have his rest and me getting my fix, not realizing I needed this fix.
The compulsivity was there. You just didn't even see it at the beginning.
Yeah. You know, maybe some people get up and go to the fridge and have a midnight snack. Well, others get up and go to the office and have a midnight break.
Can I ask, are you sober right now?
No.
How do you feel about that?
I'm a little frustrated with it right now. So as you know, I was recently sober up to 75 days, which, thank you. Thank you. It was a lot of work.
That's a huge accomplishment.
It was my third attempt in over 2 years and I made it to 75 and then again, I had some other good successes of several weeks. But this last spring has, you know, just kind of brought on a few challenges and I can't quite get in the headspace no matter how I try.
Headspace of wanting to?
Yeah. There's a lot of tools that, you use, regardless of what the addiction is, but in porn addiction specifically, there were tools that we used that would help guide us in the direction we want to go. In this case, the direction would be of sobriety okay. from porn. And, you know, when I review those tools, the reasons for change have changed a little bit. So I need to refresh those tools so that my tools are sharp again. And there's a certain amount of preparedness that goes into being sober.
Okay.
And I just, for whatever reason, I'm really kind of stuck.
Huh. How does that make you feel about you?
If I'm not careful about how I think about it, it can make me feel, guilt. Mm-hmm. If I'm really not careful, shame will come up in there. Mm-hmm. But if I'm careful and if I'm mindful, which 2.5 years in, you get some practice in mindfulness. If I'm mindful, I can look at this and go, there's a reason for me not to move forward just yet. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say that I've completely relapsed, but I would say I certainly am not on a path to sobriety where I want to be. Mm. Pick and choose your battles. Mm. Right now I have some other battles I need to work out. So okay. when I'm ready, this will happen again. And I do think about it on a day-to-day basis. About how I can get back on track. Because it's important. It's important to my marriage. Mm. It's important to me. It's important to my husband.
Mm. When you told your husband, how did he react?
When I told him I had a, you know, that I think I have a problem with this.
Yeah, before even that, like, was it like, oh yeah, I'll just tell him, no big deal. Or how did you feel leading up to that conversation?
There was no specific conversation about it. There were many very small conversations that happened around it. And, you know, things that would start, I'd come back to bed and he'd be like, oh, hey, where were you? I was like, oh, I was just in the office, which is code. He knew what I was doing. So I'm at an advantage where I have a husband who's very understanding and who gets it. And so it was many conversations over a long time to eventually say, okay, I have a problem and I've really tried to stop this and I'm going to seek help for this. And when we had that conversation, his response, which is why, you know, our marriage works so well, was whatever you need, you got it. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's pretty amazing.
It was very awesome. And I'm pretty sure that had his response not been supportive, it would have made this much more difficult of a journey. And it's already been a real challenging journey. Yeah.
He's a good guy.
That he is.
And I'm not saying that every spouse needs to respond like he does. Because I think everyone's going to be on their own journey for this, but I'm just going to say that sounds like a pretty loving response.
It is. Again, I think we were at the benefit because he had also had time to think about it. Mm. I don't know what his response would have been had it, you know, been dumped on him all in one day.
But it does sound like you said, and I'm going to see if I'm capturing this right, I've tried to quit and I can't. So there's a sense of, yes, this was kind of part of my life. But the reason I'm talking about this now is because I can't stop. Is that capturing it?
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually there comes a time where you have to say, I need help.
Yeah.
And I need help with my spouse. Mm.
Help with my spouse or from my spouse?
With. It's a journey that you go through together because it's profoundly affected both of you, or at least in my case and in other similar cases. you have to be in it together.
Mm.
Much like if, you know, if your spouse became ill,
mm.
whether you saw it coming or whether you it was a shocker, you have to stay with them.
Mm. Or even...
Because you're going to go through that illness, whether it's cancer, whether it's, loss of a sense, hearing, sight, whatever. You're going to go through this together.
The idea that you can have a porn addiction and have it be separate from your relationship, for you that seems impossible, unrealistic.
What do you mean?
I'm just interested in so I'm looking at it from the lens of somebody who's loving their porn addicted neighbor, mm-hmm. someone from their life that they love now has come forward and said, I'm addicted to porn, if it's an intimate relationship. What I'm hearing you say is, you can't just say, I'm addicted to porn, but that has nothing to do with our relationship.
Hmm.
It's profoundly impacting our relationship.
Very much so.
Huh.
I mean, if it didn't profoundly affect you to the point where you would now contemplate that you have an addiction, but you did contemplate that you have an addiction and it has affected you profoundly enough.
Hmm.
And if something affects you profoundly, it affects your marriage.
Hmm.
How could it not?
Well, as you said, intimate time with your husband started to dry up.
It did, yeah.
And that's going to impact.
That's right. And you know, to that very good point is, for many years I used to think, well, this doesn't hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I just need this. Or if I can just have a moment, then I can get on with things. So I'm not hurting anybody.
Mm. But that's not true anymore?
It's not true, because you will look back, or I looked back and realized, now that part of my marriage has suffered. So it has hurt somebody.
Mm. Wow. I had a question here that I said, what's the most loving thing someone's ever done for you? But I think your husband's response, that was pretty top of the list.
Pretty big.
What would you tell other people who are listening to this who realize they're addicts? Or they're starting to feel that sense that you have, that's like, I don't think I can... I thought this was just a hobby, but now I'm realizing I don't think I can stop anymore. What advice would you give them?
The best advice is to put myself back in those days where I was pre-contemplating.
Mm.
So maybe this is an issue, is test it out for yourself.
How so?
Well,
stop for 90 days.
Make a commitment and say, you know what? I'm not going to do this for... Give yourself a number that scares you a little bit,
huh.
Whether it's 90 or 30 or 10.
Hmm.
Or even see if you can go for a week. Whatever number you think you want to make a commitment to. And if you have a challenge or you're not successful in that commitment, that's usually time to look a little bit deeper within.
Hmm.
We love apples. And we love apple pie.
Okay.
But if we made a commitment not to have apple pie for 7 days, we're probably going to be pretty successful. Or but 30 days.
If you're a sex addict.
But if you're an apple pie addict,
yeah.
You're going to have a problem. And then you can say, okay, I've tried to quit apple pie, and it ain't working.
Mm. And it sounds like for you, like you hit that 75 mark day. After 75 days, that seems like a pretty massive shift of life to get there.
It was.
Still something knocked you off.
Yeah, I understand from everything I've read and everything I've been taught that there's kind of this 90-day period, and I think I was at a very transitional period in recovery,
mm-hmm.
and it came down to is I was trying to test the waters. I was just trying to see how far I could go, and I pushed it too far. And then I tried to remember that, okay, you know what? We're not going to tear down the whole house, mm-hmm. right? We're just going to tear down the wall and rebuild the wall and then go forward from there.
Okay.
But as I'm tearing down the wall and rebuilding, in the back of my head, I still felt like the house was a failure. So then when I got to the, you know, the end of 90 days, I was kind of like, okay, well, great. Let's just get the outside finished and move on. And that doesn't necessarily have to do with pornography or the addiction to pornography. That has to do with my core, who I am.
So your work towards sobriety has a component of not interacting with porn. But what I'm hearing you say is there's a bigger component that deals with the health inside of you.
Very, yeah. Porn isn't the addiction any more than shopping or working out or anything else. Mm-hmm. In porn addiction recovery, what I've really had to examine is how I feel about who I am and why I feel that way. Why are my expectations so unrealistically high for myself? Nobody ever in my life has ever said, you don't do good enough. Ever. And yet I have been told that 1,000 times a day.
In your own head?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so something else to think about as you go through this journey is, you know, how do I get to a healthy place so that I can feel better about myself? Because if I feel better about myself, then I don't have those days where I say, gee, I'm really stressed out and I'm going to go to the office to resolve that. So
even as we interact with people in our lives, one of the things to look at is say, porn is the thing over here. It's the shopping. But there's something inside of the person that's broken or wounded or is hurt.
Broken, wounded, hurt, or just needs further examination or understanding.
Thanks for the correction.
It is about who we are.
Yeah.
And anyone else that's listening thinking, gee, maybe they too have a problem with porn. Mm-hmm. A really nice thing to remember is it doesn't matter that it's porn. So lighten up. Give yourself the opportunity to discover what you need to discover. Because the harder we are on ourselves, the more difficult it is to take that next step and say, hey, I need some help.
And that's why you're willing to have this conversation with me, correct?
Yeah.
Because you're saying, there's people who need help. I needed help, but I had no one to talk to.
It took me just about 2 years to find you. Just to find someone else to talk to about it. There are a lot of support groups that were out there.
Okay.
And I didn't find that they were for my style.
Okay.
And what I needed was somebody who could say, oh, yeah, I can appreciate where, you know, why you think that. Or somebody that said, you did those things and I don't care. I don't like you any less. Those are very important messages for me when I go through this, because to confess to somebody that you are a porn addict, you know, or you feel, or you suspect, probably accurately, they're going to now think differently of you. And moving forward with this, let's call it a new age addiction,
okay,
is very, very difficult. For every 500 Alcoholics Anonymous meetings that are out there, there's one porn addict meeting.
And that's why we
still very new.
We said when we did this, we said, we're not going to talk about the morality of porn. That's not what this is about. This is about the addiction and how it's impacted your life and the lives of the people you love. Okay, we're running to the end. Normally I would have a screen behind us and people could text in questions, which would have been fantastic today. But unfortunately, you're going to get kind of the questions that I've asked or people have asked me.
Okay.
So rapid fire.
Yeah.
Does looking at pictures of beautiful naked men mean you want to replace your husband?
God, no. Why? No. Sorry. That was rapid fire. I see where they're coming from. So, if I'm looking at beautiful women, does that mean I want them to replace my wife?
Correct.
No. One has nothing to do with the other. Hmm. There was never a time in my past where I said, gee, you know, I think I want a new husband and I'm going to go online and look at porn to find one.
Hmm.
That doesn't compute.
Somebody asked me, is porn really an addiction? Sorry, is porn addiction really addiction?
Well, anything is an addiction if you try to prevent yourself from doing it and you find a compulsivity to move toward it.
And let me just roll it there. There's a new book, Your Brain on Porn, that is mind-blowing in terms of what porn specifically as a behavior does to our brains in terms of rewiring them.
Yes.
We won't go off on that tangent. Read the book if you're at all interested. It'll change your mind.
Yeah.
Is anyone who looks at porn a porn addict?
No. The reason I can answer that with a reasonable amount of certainty is because as I go through this addiction recovery process, there is porn that can be used healthy.
Hmm.
If it is being viewed as part of a healthy sexual mindset, that's one thing.
Hmm.
But if it is being, so for example, if you're having a glass of beer in a healthy environment and the point of the beer is to share something for camaraderie, that would be a healthy reason to have a beer. But if you're going to have that beer for the purpose of getting drunk and escaping your problems, that's where the issue is.
So we have talked about a lot of stuff today, and probably for some people, their minds are just going,
I bet.
Any last thoughts that you want to just kind of put a bow on it, or do you feel like we've captured what you wanted to say?
I didn't really have any specific message I wanted to get out there, but I hope that this will help to overcome some of that stigma and that very innocently, people can become trapped in this without ever intending to, without ever having malice, without ever wanting to leave their spouse. And the only way that I have learned through this is through connection. If I had to do this on my own, I wouldn't even bother trying.
Let me say this. I'm going to use your stage name, as we said. Chris, I honor you for being willing to come up here and talk to everyone about this, to be open about your journey, your relationship. I just think of this thing flowing out through our community and to the people that they love and through the people they love. And I can't imagine the good, the loving your neighbor that will come from this. So thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you for providing the platform to do this. It's a very difficult message to get out there to, and it's going to help a lot of people.
But it's important.
Very.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.